offering my most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, I welcome you to this week's episode of the Gita series, A Triumph Pilgrimage. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and it is my pleasure to join you as always from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. In the series, we go through the Bhagavad Gita in much detail, shloka by shloka, and we have in fact just completed one of the most important chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. We have completed chapter 4. With Swami's blessings, we'll start chapter 5 today. But there's a small portion in the summary that was left out last week. We did a summary of the fourth chapter that we completed the week before that. And the last portion of that chapter, that is, I think, shloka 33, 34 to the end, which is shloka number 42, that portion alone was missed out. So we'll cover that, and after that we will go to chapter number 5. We'll begin that. Again, in many ways, just like how at the end of chapter 2nd I said that chapter 2nd could have been the end of the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4 also could have very well been the end of the Bhagavad Gita, and we've seen how comprehensive that one chapter is, how many different types of things are being mentioned in that one chapter. The last portion, summary of which I gave last week, was the portion on the different kinds of yajnas. Krishna spoke about a jnani as one who performs the yajna defined by the Brahmarpanam shloka, the shloka that we often use to chant as a food prayer. So Krishna spoke of the jnani as somebody who looks at a yajna in that form. He sees everything as Brahman, what is offered, what is received, the fire, the state that is reached at the end of a yajna, all of that is seen as Brahman. And from there on, he spoke about different kinds of yajnas. And we went into detail about all of that, a very fascinating portion. The last portion that starts with shloka number 33. The shloka itself is something like a transition shloka between the portion on the yajnas and the portion on jnana, just like how the Brahmarpanam shloka was the transition shloka from jnana to yajnas. Because in this particular shloka, Krishna says that all these yajnas that he just spoke about are equal in their validity, equal in their efficacy. But there is one yajna which is superior to all of these. Shreyan dravyam yat yajnat jnana yajnah, he says. Jnana yajna, or the sacrifice of knowledge, or knowledge sacrifice, whichever way you'd like to define that, is superior to all forms of material sacrifice. And he says that all actions that lead to antakarna shuddhi eventually must lead to this jnana yajna. And what is this jnana yajna? As we had discussed, giving up of aparavidya and receiving paravidya. Paravidya is the transcendental knowledge, and to receive that paravidya, aparavidya, or the learning which comes through our senses, through our cognition, that needs to be eventually given up. From verse 34 to the end of the chapter, Krishna speaks about jnana, or wisdom itself, how it can be attained, how special it is, what it does to a person once it is attained, and so on and so forth. And as we saw, he has already hinted at that. So first he starts with how it can be attained. And Krishna says, go to the jnanis, go to the tattvadarshis, perform pranipata, pariprashna, and seva, and they will reveal it to you. The famous shloka that was explained by Shirdi Baba to his devotee, Nana Sahib Chandolkar. Pranipata is to surrender to the guru. Seva is to perform service, but it does not mean just doing some work in the name of service to the guru, like pressing his feet or, you know, taking care of his mundane affairs and so on. It is an extension of this pranipata, or surrender itself. Because when you surrender to the guru, you surrender all your instrumentalities to the guru, the body, the mind, the senses, and all of it to the guru. So by which, when you say seva, you mean you are at the complete service of the guru. Whatever the guru wishes, you are ready to do for him, right? That is the seva that is being referred to here. And finally, pariprashna, to ask questions, but to ask questions in a manner to clear one's doubts and to understand and grasp better what the guru is teaching. Not asking questions to either test the guru or to belittle the guru or to in as a means to self-aggrandizement, right? And finally, Shirdi Baba explains as in his explanation to that shloka, he says, the tattvadarshis, when you perform these three to them, will then instruct you about ajnana. He says he does not teach you, they do not teach you about jnana, but they instruct you on ajnana. Because you don't have to be taught what is natural to you. I don't have to be taught to see. If what is before me, what is obstructing my sight is removed, the eye sees naturally. And in a similar manner, when what obstructs this jnana is removed, then jnana is there. So the guru removes ajnana by making us aware and conscious about it. And that's the beautiful explanation that Shirdi Baba gives. In Swami's Gita Vahini, then Swami speaks extensively about the various types of gurus, the relationship between a guru and Sishya in the context of this particular shloka. And we went through a few passages when we were going through the shloka. From verse 35, Krishna begins to speak of the glories of jnana. And his first description of jnana is one of the most comprehensive and classic definitions of jnana. He says, once acquired, the delusion or moha leaves never to return again. So this jnana is no flash of wisdom that comes and goes. And I'm sure we all have experienced that every now and then. You know, we all have those philosophical moments of epiphany which come, and a sense of vairagya which comes, and then the next morning when we wake up, it's all gone. True jnana is not like that. It is a complete shift in perception through which you lose the ability to be deluded, if I could put it that way. Lose the ability of being influenced by moha. What is this moha? I am this body. So-and-so belongs to me. So-and-so is a stranger. This feeling is referred to as moha. And how does this moha go? Krishna says in the shloka, the jnani begins to see all beings in his own self and everything in Krishna himself. So there is no duality. Like a boy who, let's say, feared his own shadow. I'm sure you've seen little children for the first time encountering their own shadow and fearing it, right? So like a child who feared his own shadow until he understands that the shadow was his own, there can be no fear or misunderstanding once you realize that every being that you encounter in this world, every individual, is nothing but a reflection of your own self. So that is the definition that Krishna gives of jnana. Once this is acquired, you see all beings, sarvabhutani, he says, all beings are seen in yourself, and all of this is seen as the Lord himself. Then Krishna makes a very intriguing statement. He says, even if one is the worst sinner among all sinners, jnana will be a raft that can take one across that ocean of sin. We discussed how this is not an endorsement that one can do whatever they want and get away by seeking jnana, but sin and merit attach oneself through the ego or the ahankara. And when we say jnana sublimates that ahankara completely, all our actions, whether they are sin or merit, do not have anything to attach themselves to in that sense. If you look at all the actions that we perform, good, bad, right, wrong, sin or merit, these are all performed in a certain plane of existence. We refer to what the state we are in as a waking state. We refer to what we experience after we go to sleep as a dream state, right? But when we talk about jnana, jnana is in a completely different state. So it is almost like what you experience in your dream state being completely washed away and removed in the waking state, right? So jnana is like that waking state, and all the sin and merit and good and bad and right and wrong that we perform is like what we perform in the dream state. It doesn't matter what you were in the dream. When you wake up, all of it vanishes. So this is about jnana being the panacea supreme. It is not about getting away with doing wrong in the name of jnana. But the value of merit has its own place, right? That's why Krishna emphasized so much on performing swadharma, and we had also discussed how swadharma includes a moral, ethical life too, right? So performing merit has its own role, but when we are talking about jnana, we are talking of it as a supreme release from all actions. In fact, Krishna is speaking about sin because that is something that is worrying Arjuna, right? He is about to participate in the battle and he is worried about sin. But what Krishna says here is equally applicable to merit too. Even if one considers oneself as a very meritorious person, jnana has the ability to remove him from that feeling that I am a very good person too, right? So we shouldn't forget that here Krishna is trying to get Arjuna to perform his swadharma, which is a complex of morality and values and virtues and duties. And if performed diligently as karma yoga, it will eventually lead to jnana, which jnana Krishna is glorifying in this part. So we can never lose the picture of importance that is given to goodness and virtues. In the larger sense, sin and merit also lead to bondage. Sin or merit leads to as much bondage as sin does. That is why the validity of jnana is way beyond good and bad. And that's why the next description that Krishna gives is that jnana can burn to ashes all karmas. And we have discussed how this refers to all the three types of karmas that the Vedas speak about. All sanchita karma, the backlog of all lifetimes, are completely burnt because the ego is not there for it to be attached to. As I said, sin and merit attaches to the individual through the ego, and when the ego is sublimated, all sanchita karma, the backlog of any number of lifetimes of karma, completely becomes baseless or foundationless. And similarly, agami karma is also burnt. Agami karma is the karma that we accumulate even as we live through this life. When you say the jnani has completely given up doership, or he acts without doership, the consequences do not attach to that person. And we are referring to the agami karma being completely negated from the picture. And when it comes to prarabdha, prarabdha is the karma that dictates our present life and this present body that we are living through. And we had spoken of the two viewpoints on prarabdha karma. Some scholars and some commentators on the Gita believe that prarabdha karma also is burnt. When Krishna says all karma, karmani sarvani, he says. So when he says all karma gets burnt, they believe prarabdha also is burnt. But the other point of view is prarabdha remains, but prarabdha acts only on the body and the person has lost body consciousness completely. So in that sense, it doesn't matter whether the prarabdha is operating or not. So either way, Krishna says all karmas are burnt for the person who has acquired jnana. The 38th verse is again a very interesting verse where Krishna describes jnana as the best purifier of the mind. He says, Nahi jnanena sadrisham pavitra miha vidyate. There is no purifier equivalent to jnana in this world. Till now, karma yoga was spoken of as the best purifier, right? We were talking about karma being performed as karma yoga, leading to antakarna shuddhi preparing the mind for jnana. But here Krishna is saying jnana is even better than that in purifying the mind. Well, this probably must have led to a bit of confusion in Arjuna's mind, as we will see in the beginning of the next chapter. But we had spoken of how this is a reference to the process of self-enquiry itself as a sadhana, right? When Krishna says jnana is the best purifier, the path of jnana is being referred to here, the path of self-enquiry as sadhana, and how along with performing one's duty or karma, along with performing sadhanas like japa, dhyana, bhajan, seva and all of that, one must also take up this process of self-inquiry, nitya anitya parishilana, right? It's one of the things which is said. You have to constantly one ask and inquire what is eternal, what is ephemeral, what is real, what is unreal, what is this self, what is atma, what is anatma, right? And we had discussed how Swami had said this, after a certain point in our spiritual journey, 70% of our sadhana must be this self-inquiry. So when Krishna says, jnana is the greatest purifier, we had discussed how the reference is probably to self-inquiry, and we will see that this is our discussion. Krishna doesn't say this. And that is why this probably must have been one of the reasons why Arjuna was a bit confused at this point. So in the first line, Krishna speaks of jnana as a tool. When you say that he is talking of self-inquiry as a tool for purifying the mind, he is speaking of jnana as a tool. But in the next line, he speaks of jnana as the goal. Because he says, when the mind is prepared through karma yoga, with time, jnana comes in that mind automatically, or surfaces in that mind automatically. Maybe suggesting that even the inquiry will start in a mind that has been purified by karma yoga. Right? So even if you look at the jnana being referred to in the second line as also a tool, you could even take it that way. But from how it is mentioned in the context of that entire chapter, it appears like the first line, Krishna speaks of self-inquiry as a tool for purifying the mind. And the second line, he says that when you do karma yoga and when you do the self-inquiry, eventually you don't have to do anything other than all of this to acquire jnana. Jnana automatically surfaces in the mind that has been purified thus. In verses 39 and 40, Krishna reverts to what are the prerequisites for jnana. And as we had seen, they contain two very important phrases that Swami refers to as the two banks of one's lives. Swami refers to them as two Ashtakshari mantras which should channel our life as sadhakas. Krishna first mentions three qualities. One who is a Shraddhavan, that is who has faith. Tatparaha, is committed and devoted. Samyatendriya, who has control over the senses, labhate jnanam. Such a person attains wisdom. But we saw how all these qualities are contained in this one word, Shraddha, or faith. And that is why the Ashtakshari mantra which Swami refers to is Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. Where Swami says the Shraddha itself contains all of the qualities. In fact, Swami speaks of faith or Shraddha as the treasure trove which contains all the other virtues and qualities that make one worthy of jnana, what is referred to as the shat sampattis. We had discussed about all of that when we had gone through the shloka. So in that sense, when we refer to as tatpara and samyatendriya, that is commitment and control of the senses, both of these also are contained in that shraddha. Tatparaha, which means when you have faith in something, you must also be ready to commit to that. When the guru says there is something more than what this world can offer, something more than the heavens, one must seek that. If we have faith in the guru, we must be prepared to modify our lives to express that faith, right? That is what is referred to as tatparaha. Shraddhavan tatparha. When you have faith in the words of the Guru, the words of the scriptures or words of Swami, you are ready to commit yourself to what you have faith in. How do you commit yourself? You are ready to make modifications in the way you lead your life, in the way you make choices in your life. And that is not possible unless one has self-control, samyatendriya. So in that sense, the word Shraddha actually contains Tatpara and Samyatendriya. There is no point in having faith if you're not ready to commit your life to that. And there is no point in trying to commit yourself to something if you do not have self-mastery. So in that sense, all these three are contained in Shraddha. So it all starts with faith, and faith in the supreme truth spoken of by the scriptures and jnanis, faith in the words of the Guru who explains those truths, and most importantly, faith in one's own ability to achieve that jnana. That threefold Shraddha is what is being referred to here. So Swami says, without these, one cannot progress in the spiritual path itself. And that is why Swami says this is one of the banks of life. And as we have seen many times in the discourse of the Gita already, Krishna says what must be developed, but also reiterates what must be given up or what must be avoided. And in that sense, in that vein, he says, Samshayatma Vinashyati. The one who is riddled with doubts perishes. And this is the other Ashtakshari mantra, which forms the other bank of this river, Samshayatma Vinashyati. He defines Samshayatma as one who is ignorant and lacks Shraddha. Right? He says, he uses the words Agnya and Ashraddha. Such a person becomes a Samshayatma, one who is completely filled with doubts. It is not a sin to be ignorant, that is Agnya, but to be ignorant and lack faith means one would never make the efforts to come out of that ignorance too. And that is a dangerous situation, and that will lead to ruin. That's why Krishna says, for a person full of doubts, there is no peace in this world or the next one. Right? So that is what he says in that shloka which has that phrase, Samshayatma Vinashyati. So clearly, just based on these two verses, we can say there are three categories of people who are still Agnanis. One who are ignorant and have no faith, and they lead the most pitiful lives. Krishna says in this world, and there is no doubt of them, I mean, there's no question of them attaining something beyond this world either. They have no peace or happiness, be it worldly or spiritual. Then comes the second category, those that are ignorant but have faith. These people will start making slow progress towards jnana. They will also find solace that comes with leading a purposeful life. This is something that we often speak of, and I've mentioned it many, many times before. There is a solace which comes when we are undergoing pain, when we see purpose, right? When I have physical pain and there is a purpose for that pain, that thought itself brings solace, right? So these category of people find solace that comes with leading a purposeful life. But this category, they do not completely commit themselves to what they have faith in. Why is that so? The many reasons that Krishna explained in the third chapter, the weakness of mind, the weakness of the senses, the predominance of Rajoguna and being distracted by others who apparently get away with doing bad deeds. But the third category are those that are Shraddhavan Tatparaha Samyatendriya. They have the faith, they are also committed and devoted, and also have the self-control which helps them to be committed and devoted. Such a person eventually earns jnana. And jnanam labdhva param shantim achirena adhigacchati. Having acquired that jnana, supreme shanti, right? It's not the ordinary shanti, param shanti. See, supreme shanti is obtained instantly. And this peace is not that which comes and goes. It is not a solace which the second category of people, I said, you know, once in a while they enjoy it. These people, the third category, eventually earn param shanti, which cannot be challenged or affected by anything that happens in this world, the ups and downs in this world. The last two shlokas of this chapter are a brief summary of the chapter and also remind Arjuna what all this explanation is meant for finally, right? What is it meant to make him do? In case he has forgotten it, or in case any of us have forgotten it going through the Gita. And Krishna describes a jnani in this particular shloka in three phrases. He says, Yoga sanyasta karmanam jnana sanchinna samshayam and atmavantam. These are the three phrases or words that he uses. Yoga sanyasta karmanam, that's the first one. Jnana sanchinna samshayam, that is the second one. And finally, atmavantam. Yoga sanyasta karmanam means one who has come to renounce karmas through yoga. Again, a topic that we'll be discussing about in this chapter too. For now, we can say someone who has given up karma, but not as a sannyasi, but through yoga, having attained jnana. But there's a little bit of confusion in this, which Arjuna will express in the next chapter. And then Krishna says, jnana sanchinna samshayam. One whose doubts are completely destroyed by jnana. However much faith one may have, it is impossible for one to be completely free from doubts, because doubts completely go only when jnana or direct knowledge is finally attained. How much ever we are told that you and every person you encounter and God are one and the same, we are spoken of about the philosophy of Advaita. But when we go through events in life, we will have doubts that question the validity of this truth that is being told to us. But once jnana is attained, and Krishna, as Krishna said, it will be clear as daylight that all beings are one in you and all of you are one in God. And when I see it, I can never unsee it after that, and so I can never have a doubt. And hence a jnani is described as one in whom samshayas or doubts have been completely removed because of jnana or direct experience. Jnana sanchinna samshayam. The jnana has completely uprooted all the doubts. And the third quality, which can never ever be overstated, atmavantam. Mastery over oneself. As we have seen, without this, nothing is possible. That's why beginning from the second chapter, Krishna repeats this quality as being very, very important. So Krishna mentioning all this tells Arjuna, if you want to avoid getting tangled in karma, be such a person with these three qualities. Simply giving up your actions doesn't mean giving up your karmas. And so saying, he says, Arjuna, get up, take recourse in yoga, and vanquish the doubts in the mind with the sword of knowledge, literally telling Arjuna, get up and start fighting. And it's quite interesting. Imagine Krishna says, Arjuna, vanquish all your doubts. And the very next thing Arjuna says is, Krishna, I have a doubt, right? But if you look at it, Arjuna is doing just what Krishna had told him to do. Because in front of Arjuna stands Krishna, the very epitome of wisdom. Wisdom itself, as Swami described in the Gita Vahini. And he is placing his doubts before this wisdom so that Krishna can destroy them for him. So jnana sanchinna samshayam. He is doing it literally. He is taking his samshaya and placing it in front of this jnana, who is Krishna, who is standing in front of him, so that those doubts can be destroyed. And this is the pariprashna that Krishna said that a student is permitted to and must indulge in. So though, as I said, Gita could have pretty much ended here, because a beautiful discourse has been given, this chapter is quite comprehensive, and it's whole also, right? It started off by Krishna saying, come on, let's fight. It also concludes with Krishna saying, so let us get up and may you fight. So in that sense, again, this is the point where the Gita could have concluded, but Arjuna is not satisfied. He asks a doubt, and so the Gita continues, and so the Gita series and this triune pilgrimage also continues. So with that, let us go to the fifth chapter, and this is the summary of the fourth chapter. We have completed the summary successfully. It has taken us 1.5 episodes, but I think it was worth going through it slowly and comprehensively. So at this point, Arjuna asks his question. The first shloka of the fifth chapter begins with Arjuna asking a very important doubt. As always, I have it rendered in the voice of Brother Shyam very clearly, and very grateful to him for doing this for us. We listen to the shloka. I'll give you a brief meaning of that and then we will discuss it. This is the first shloka of the fifth chapter.
Arjuna uvacha sanyasam karmanam krishna पुनर्योगं च शंससि यच्छ्रेययतयोरेकम् तन्मे ब्रूहि सुनिश्चितम्।
अर्जुन सेड, ओ कृष्ण, यू प्रेज रिनन्सिएशन ऑफ एक्शंस एंड अगेन योगा, टेल मी फॉर सर्टन दैट वन विच इज बेटर बिटवीन दीज टू। That's the first verse of the fifth chapter. There are two statements that Krishna made towards the end of the fourth chapter, which possibly could have caused confusion in Arjuna's mind. And as I had said, when we were going through the second chapter, each shloka was so loaded and so cryptic. And we had the benefit of time, and also we had the benefit of reading Swami's explanation from the Gita Vahini and the many discourses. But to Arjuna, they are all coming as cryptic statements. Given that Arjuna is much wiser than you and me, and I'm sure he would have understood much more than what you and I would understand if we just listened to one shloka. But nevertheless, these are cryptic statements that are coming to him from Krishna without much explanation. And he is still trying to make sense of what is being told to him. So in that sense, a few statements that Krishna had made could have possibly confused Arjuna. One of that is when Krishna explained jnana as the greatest purifier. If karma is meant to purify the mind, and jnana also can purify the mind, and jnana is much better in purifying the mind than karma, why can't I give up karma and pursue jnana itself? We discussed it, and I just give you a brief summary of that also, that what is being referred to here is the self-enquiry that goes hand in hand with one's duty and other sadhanas. But to Arjuna, it comes merely as a statement without much explanation. The other thing that could possibly be what is causing this confusion is what Krishna said in the penultimate shloka. He says, yoga sanyasta karmanam. Krishna said, through yoga, you give up all karmas. It appears that Krishna is saying that karmas have to be given up sometime or the other. Karma sannyasa is indeed necessary, if not now, eventually, right? That seems to be the statement that Krishna is making when he says that yoga will finally lead you to karma sannyasa. So this is the conflict that Krishna says, that, you know, Krishna says act, but also says karmas have to be given up. In fact, in the end, he described jnani as someone who has completely given up all karmas. All karmas are burnt and so on. And possibly because of that, Arjuna is now confused. He says, Krishna, sannyasam karmanam, the renunciation of actions. Shamsasi, you praise. Punaha yogam cha, and then you praise yoga. So he says, sannyasam karmanam, the renunciation of actions, you praise. Shamsasi. Punaha yogam cha, and then you also praise yoga. Yeta yoho, of these two, yat shreyaha, which is better. Sunischitam, conclusively, tat me bruhi. You tell me that. Between these two, you decide which one is right, and conclusively please tell it to me. So that gives you a feeling of deja vu, I'm sure, because quite clearly similar to the question that Arjuna asks in the beginning of the third chapter. He said, between jnana and karma, tell me one that is better, right? Pretty much similar to what he is saying here. Now he says, slightly rephrasing it, between yoga and sannyasa, which is better? You seem to be speaking of both, and you seem to be praising both. And these are mutually exclusive, right? I either give up my actions or I perform my actions. I can't do both, right? And when you talk of these as, these are two pathways. I either take that road, I take this road. I can't be driving on both, right? So that is why Arjuna finds this to be contradictory, and he says, I don't know what to decide between the two. So he says, between yoga and sannyasa, between karma yoga and karma sannyasa, tell me which is better. Because Krishna just said, yoga will eventually lead to karma sannyasa, almost suggesting that karma sannyasa is something that you will anyway have to take up. So anyway, if I have to give up my actions, Arjuna is asking, why can't I do it right now? And as I said then too, this is the essential dilemma in Arjuna's mind. And though Krishna's reply in the next shloka is going to be conclusive, categorical, Arjuna is not going to stop asking this question, and he's going to keep asking this question in different forms, because that's what is predominantly in his mind. Can I quit this war? Can I become a sannyasi? And can I sit and meditate? Right? That's precisely what he's going to ask, and he's going to put it in different forms. There are a few points that I wish to make before we go to Krishna's answer. One is the doubt in Arjuna's mind regarding sannyasa. Yes, Krishna did describe a sannyasi in all what he has been saying. But that sannyasa that he is referring to is different from the sannyasa that Arjuna is repeatedly asking about. There's a clear difference between the two. What is the sannyasa Arjuna is asking about? Going back to the context of this whole thing, he was faced with a to be or not to be situation, and he wanted to literally get out of it. So he looked at sannyasa or renunciation as one of the options, whereby one renounces all relationships and statuses in society. So when you renounce all your relationships, you renounce all your duties towards your family. When you renounce your status in society, you renounce your duty even towards the society. So when Arjuna becomes a sannyasi, if he is allowed to, he gives up his duties towards his brother Yudhishthira. He gives up his duties of his the husband duties towards Draupadi. And when he takes up sannyasa, he gives up all the duties towards his society. So his kshatriya status is given up, and his obligation to fight for dharma is also given up. So one thing is, Arjuna is considering sannyasa as an escape route out of the situation. We'll come to that point a little later. Whereas the sannyasa that Krishna is referring to is a means to jnana, a path that a sadhaka wishes to take. Right? So it's a completely different thing from the point of view of what is the mental turmoil that is leading to sannyasa, the mental balance or mental turmoil that is leading to this decision. And even if we consider the sannyasa as a path and lifestyle of a sadhaka, the sannyasa that Krishna spoke of when he was describing the jnani is the sannyasa that comes after one becomes a jnani. If you recall, I was constantly saying that Krishna is all through describing a jnani for the benefit of a karma yogi or for a spiritual aspirant, right? When he said that, the jnani does not have jealousy, he accepts things as they come, and he has no doership. I was repeatedly saying that, you know, when you describe a jnani as somebody who has given up the feeling of I or the feeling of body consciousness, everything is contained in that. You don't have to explain all of this after that. But Krishna explains because these are all beneficial for a karma yogi. You know, these are beneficial for a person who is on the path. So when Krishna says that all the jnani's karmas are given up, Arjuna has taken that also as a tip to a sadhaka. Just like how when Krishna said, a jnani has given up jealousy as a tip for a sadhaka, when he says the jnani gives up all karmas, he does karma sannyasa, Arjuna has taken that also as a tip to a sadhaka, suggesting that he must become a sannyasi. But of course, all through, Krishna is also speaking about karma yoga and the importance of karma yoga, and so clearly that is what has caused the confusion in Arjuna's mind. So clearly speaking, there are two types of sannyasas. One is the path of sannyasa, and the other can be described as the sannyasa that happens after one becomes a jnani. Once I become a jnani, there is no ego, there is no sense of doership, and I do not act even when I am acting. That is what Krishna referred to as akarma in karma, which means whether I act or I don't, I have given up action. I might be performing actions, but I don't perform them. So for the world, I could either become like a jnani like Janaka, who continues to perform actions even after realizing the self, or I could become like sage Yajnavalkya. He is the example which is often given as a sannyasi who takes up sannyasa after jnana is attained, who goes and tells his wife Maitreyi that I wish to take up sannyasa, and he leaves his home. So these two are spoken of as two types of sannyasas. One is referred to as Vividisha Sannyasa and the other as Vidvat Sannyasa. Vividisha Sannyasa is the renunciation of the seeker as a means to attain knowledge. I'll repeat it again. Vividisha Sannyasa is the renunciation of the seeker as a means to attain knowledge. Whereas Vidvat Sannyasa is the renunciation of the self-knower itself. So Vividisha Sannyasa is the sannyasa of the sadhaka. Vidvat Sannyasa is the sannyasa of the jnani. Vividisha Sannyasa, I'll repeat it again, is the renunciation of a sadhaka. Vidvat Sannyasa is the renunciation of the jnani after attaining the knowledge. So you can clearly see these are worlds apart. So when Krishna is speaking about karma yoga leading to sannyasa, he is referring to Vidvat Sannyasa or the sannyasa of a jnani. But when Arjuna is asking Yat Shreyaha Yetayoho, which is better between the two, sannyasa and karma yoga, he is referring to the sannyasa of the seeker, which is Vividisha Sannyasa. So there's a clear difference between the two. The word sannyasa means renunciation. So are you renouncing in the quest of knowledge, or are you renouncing because you have attained that knowledge? So Krishna was speaking about the renunciation that comes to a jnani after the knowledge is attained. You know, whenever he was referring to, oh, he does not care about the fruits of the action, he does not worry about what happens to him, he was talking about the sannyasa that happens once you see everything in yourself. You don't have anything to crave after. You are everything, right? You don't have to possess anything. You're not afraid of anything because there's no duality. So where is the question of you craving for anything? So that sannyasa is completely different. But the sannyasa that Arjuna is referring to is, he does not have the knowledge. Clearly he does not have the knowledge, and that is why Krishna is teaching him that. We all do not have that knowledge. But if we are talking about sannyasa, we are talking about sannyasa as a means to attain that knowledge. Can I give up everything? Can I give up my status in society? Can I give up my family? Can I give up my obligations? And will that help me attain jnana? Right? So clearly these are two different sannyasas which are being spoken about. And when Arjuna asks if a seeker wants liberation, should he take up sannyasa? Or should he take up karma yoga? And for once, Krishna is going to give a very clear and categorical answer in the shloka, which is the second shloka in the fifth chapter. So this is the question that is asked. I hope the confusion is clear. The sannyasa that Arjuna is referring, the sannyasa that Krishna is referring to, is the spontaneous renunciation which comes once you have jnana. But the sannyasa that Arjuna is asking about is the sannyasa which is taken up in the quest of that jnana. So that is why these become pathways. Sannyasa and karma yoga become pathways. So what is that clear answer that Krishna gives when Arjuna asks between sannyasa and karma yoga, which one is better? So we listen to that shloka, shloka number 2. I'll give you a brief meaning of that, and we'll discuss that before we conclude for the day.
Shri Bhagavanuvacha सन्यासः कर्मयोगश्च निःश्रेयसकरावुभौ तयोस्तु कर्मसन्न्यासात् कर्मयोगो विशिष्यते.
The Blessed Lord said, both renunciation of actions and karma yoga lead to liberation. Between the two, karma yoga, however, excels over renunciation of actions. So that is the categorical answer of Krishna. That is the second shloka of the fifth chapter. Right in the beginning of the third chapter, Arjuna had asked the very same question, and Krishna had given an answer too. He had said, Loke asmin dvividha nishtha pura prokta maya. Two kinds of steadfastness in this world were spoken of by me in those days of yore. Jnana yogena sankhyanam, karma yogena yoginam. Jnana yoga for the sankhyas and karma yoga for the yogis. Or renunciation for the sankhyas, the path of karma for the other aspirants. So very clearly Krishna had called both of them as two pathways or nishthas. We had spoken of why the word nishtha has a special significance. If one is steadfast on any of these two paths, one can certainly reach the goal. Of course, he didn't say that you can certainly reach the goal, but by merely stating that both of these pathways were created by me, he has validated both and he has said that both of them are going to lead you to the goal, whichever you take to, as long as you consider them as a nishtha or you are committed to them. But then, of course, in that chapter, Krishna goes on to say how no one can give up karma, some action will always have to be performed and so on and so forth. So he does not tell directly that karma yoga is better, but he is kind of hinting at that by saying that anyway you cannot give up action, so why not take the path which involves purifying through action. But here in this context, Krishna repeats that same thing that he had told in the beginning of the third chapter when he said that these both are equally valid, but he doesn't stop there. He goes further. So Krishna says, sannyasaha karma yogascha, renunciation and karma yoga, nishreyas sakarau ubhau, both lead to the highest goal. I'm sorry. Arjuna had asked, yata shreyaha, which is better? Shreya means better, right? But the word Shreya also means the highest good or the highest goal. So Krishna plays with that dual meaning of this word Shreya when he says, Nishreya Sakarau Ubhau. Don't ask me which is better. Both lead to Nishreyas or the ultimate goal. But then he doesn't stop there. He says, Tayostu, of the two, Karma Sanyasa, karma yogo vishishyate. Karma yoga is better than karma sannyasa. So there comes Krishna's clear categorical answer. Whether this is an answer which is meant only for Arjuna, or is it a universal answer that is meant for everyone, that karma yoga is better than karma sannyasa, I think for now I will leave it for you to ponder upon. But very clearly Krishna says, when asked between these two pathways, tell which is better, they are both equally good in the fact that both will lead to the same goal, right? He does not mince matters there. He says both of these will lead you to the same goal, whether you become a sannyasi or you become a karma yogi. But still, if you ask me between these two, which one is better? Because you have to make a choice, and we always want a little bit of expert advice, right? We have one life and we're going to commit it to that, and we want to know which one is better. So Krishna says, karma yoga is better. As I just mentioned, you know, why is this whole confusion? Why is Arjuna repeatedly asking this one question? Should I become a sannyasi? Is it okay if I become a sannyasi? Is it all right? Because Krishna is speaking so much about the importance of jnana. I mean, imagine the context. It is in the battlefield. They're all talking about, you know, you should be probably talking about strategies of, you know, how many soldiers that one has to kill or what astras one has to use. But in the battlefield, Krishna is standing and speaking about jnana, the supreme wisdom. So clearly Krishna is sending out a message that the jnana is so important, right? So Arjuna says that if it is so important, then why can't I leave and go and pursue that? But the whole idea of Krishna repeatedly speaking about jnana, right? As we said, even when he spoke about karma yoga, he very clearly said that one should have their goal as jnana. One should have their goal as the ultimate liberation. And we had spoken of how even for karma yoga, that mumukshatvam is so very important. That craving for the ultimate release from the cycle of birth and death is so important. The reason why Krishna is repeatedly speaking about jnana, be it in the second chapter, be it in the third chapter, be it in the fourth chapter that we've just completed, whether Arjuna performs karma or takes up sannyasa, the driving force should be jnana. Because when he says it doesn't matter whether you become a sannyasi or you become a karma yogi, it means that at this point, whether Arjuna decides to leave the battlefield or decides to fight, both ways he can reach the ultimate goal. But for that, the goal must be jnana. But at this point, that is not the case with Arjuna. Yes, he's thinking of taking up sannyasa. Probably he will also take up karma yoga if forced by Krishna. But in both cases, it is not quite clear whether Arjuna's mind has been fixed on that jnana as the only goal. I think the whole idea of Krishna repeatedly speaking about jnana, and he's not going to stop with this, I think there are going to be more references to that, the glory of jnana too. It is because it doesn't matter whether you become a sannyasi or a karma yogi from that first statement that Krishna makes, but you must ensure that the goal that you're chasing is right. Arjuna wanted to leave the battlefield not because he was obsessed with jnana. That's very clear. Not because he wanted to attain jnana. Arjuna was only looking at sannyasa as an escape route. If Arjuna had not asked any of these questions, let's say the Gita never happened, he had performed his actions, even then he would not have been a karma yogi. He would have performed his actions probably with a little bit of anger, with a little bit of vengeance, with trying to establish himself as the greatest warrior of all times. All of that would have propelled him to do action. So in either way, he would not have attained the ultimate goal from the point of view of just that choice that he's making. I'm not talking about the rest of the life that he has led or what would happen after this and all of that. Just that choice. But it is most important, before you decide whether you are going to take up to action or you're going to take up to sannyasa, the most important thing is to fix the mind on the supreme goal. And when I say the supreme goal, something that is not worldly, something that is not going to be attained in this world or even swarga for that matter, right? We are looking for supreme happiness, be it supreme happiness, supreme peace, supreme release or supreme equanimity or whatever you'd like to call that, right? So whether you take up action or whether you take up sannyasa, the goal should be very, very clear. And unless we compare a karma yogi and a sannyasi, the two pathways, comparing them is meaningless, right? And that is why Krishna is going on repeating about jnana, so that, you know, if Arjuna had said that I want to be a jnani, I only want to pursue jnana, probably Krishna would not have stopped him and given him the Bhagavad Gita. You know, if the craving for jnana was pure, let us say that Arjuna turned up for the battle, he's standing there in the battlefield and there is a genuine sense of dispassion at that moment and he says that I don't want to fight. That is not the case here. Arjuna is saying I don't want to fight out of delusion, right? And that is the whole purpose, and I think that is the most important message that Krishna is giving in this portion. Whether you do action or you give up action is secondary. The first and foremost important thing is, have you defined your goal? Have you defined your target? And after that, only the pathway comes, right? Which path should I take? You know, first, if I want to go to Bangalore, I should decide that I have to go to Bangalore. And then I decide which route I'm going to take, which commute I'm going to take. Am I going to go in a bus or should I go in a car? Should I start in the morning? Should I start in the evening? All of that comes after I have decided and defined my destination. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, first define your goal as jnana. And then we will talk about karma sannyasa and karma yoga. And if we talk about karma sannyasa and karma yoga, probably Krishna is telling at this point that karma yoga is better. Or, as I said, if you feel that this is an answer which is specific to Arjuna, probably for a person who is still undecided, probably for a person who is still not clearly defined the ultimate goal as liberation, karma yoga might be a better option than karma sannyasa. Is one of the ways that you could probably look at this answer as. So I'm not saying this very categorically or very clearly. I'm just saying that the most important thing is to define that target. If you define the target, karma yoga or sannyasa does not matter. If you reach the goal, if you become a jnani, again, whether it's karma yoga or karma sannyasa does not matter. Whether you become a janaka or a yajnavalkya does not matter. Both of them, personalities are personalities that we would definitely be much better off becoming than what we are right now, right? If we were to become that kind of a jnani, whether we are karma yogi or a sannyasi, it really doesn't matter. So in both cases, what is most important is to fix that jnana as the goal, and that is the whole purpose of the entire fourth chapter that we went through, right? Krishna is constantly telling that, how can you not pursue this when this opportunity is there in front of you? As Swami would say, you're born a human, and this birth of being a human itself presents this opportunity of acquiring this precious gem called jnana. How can you give up this pursuit and then go after pursuits of the world? How can you go after pursuits of money, wealth, and all of that, right? So that is the most important thing that Krishna's words are crying out to you and me. That at least somewhere we must have this craving for this paravidya, or this pleasure that is beyond what this world can offer. So I think with that, dear listeners, I'll conclude this week's episode. It is always a pleasure to join all of you week after week, and I really cannot tell you how grateful I am for your company, because if not for your company, if not for this program, I can be absolutely sure I would not have dwelled so deep into the verses of the Bhagavad Gita. So I'm eternally grateful to all of you. I'm eternally grateful to the Swami in each one of you for giving me this opportunity. Do join me again next week at 7:30 p.m. for the resumption of this Triune Pilgrimage of the Gita series. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the last segment of today's Thursday Live, the Vahini Satsang. Till I meet you the next time, take care, happy listening, Jai Sai Ram.